must have drilled through it. Maybe that's why I'd seen multiple winks. Each drilling beam had been for a different type of target. Ice, dirt, and finally rock. Manipulating the controls, I slowed our descent. The floater engine wailed, and electrical-smelling smoke drifted through the chamber. The repeated strikes against ice walls must have been too much for the machine. Just a little longer, I coaxed the vessel. Then I saw the bottom on the screen. I saw the waiting tasks and three tripod-mounted cannons aimed at us. As we floated down the last few meters, I saw other floaters to the sides and the beginnings of several long underground tunnels.
"Now what happens?"
Rax said.
"Do we surrender to the tasks?"
The floater settled on bottom rock. We'd made it. I glanced at Jenna. She was still unconscious. Good. I didn't want her in the way, and I didn't want her to die in case I failed.
"Logan,"
Rax asked,
"do you have a plan?"
I headed for the hatch as I heard the ramp thud into place outside. "I do, guard advisor," I told Rax as I showed him the otherworldly blade. Chapter 47. With the knife held before me, I walked down the ramp. I'd intended to walk meekly, as if offering the knife to the tasks. Instead, as I descended the ramp, my chest and the tilt of my chin rose. I felt like a conqueror before his prey. The tasks had started by raising their beam carbines. The weapons had tracked me at first. The farther I walked down the ramp, the less certain the giant werewolf-like creatures seemed. Finally, all the carbines pointed at the rocky floor. The floor was smooth, with headlights from the nearby floaters providing the bright illumination. "I am the One," I said in a voice I hardly recognized. "You are the Many. Now before I slay the lot of you, set down your weapons and lay on your stomachs." It was a silly speech. I could hardly believe I'd uttered it. Yet to my astonishment, the beastly aliens set down their beam carbines and one by one got down on their bellies. As I began to walk among them, they covered their heads and each began to tremble. I would have expected Rax to comment on their strange behavior, but the crystal had fallen silent again. A small part of me realized this was yet another manifestation of the knife. I wondered then if Sand had realized the full power of the blade. I was beginning to doubt it. This was much more than a knife. I had a distinct feeling that the weapon was in actuality an entity, a power that could take over its host. In our dimension, warriors picked up and used swords. I was beginning to believe that in the other dimension, swords caused warriors to pick them up and then obey the sword's directions. It was bass-ackwards, as some folks say. Yet if that was the case, the aliens from the other side had already made their invasion in the form of the knife. In some manner, Sand had kept it contained all these centuries. If I were right about this, why would the knife want to stop Baran from opening the portal? At that point, I could hear silent laughter. I know that's paradoxical, but there it was. I heard the laughter. It was mocking and arrogant, and it vanished almost as soon as I recognized it. As I walked amidst the prone tasks, I stopped, scanning them. I seemed to view them with new eyes, with new senses. "You," I said in a strange voice. I pointed the knife at the biggest task. He began to tremble more than the others. "You are the leader," I said. The giant creature cringed. "Stand," I ordered. With reluctance, the task stood, keeping its wolfish head bowed in fear and submission to me. "Pick up your weapon," I said. The creature seemed to fight the command. Finally, though, as if overcome by the knife's will, the task took up the carbine. "Order the others to do likewise," I said. The chieftain delayed for too long. Before I could stop myself, or stop the command of the knife to my body, I stepped up to the chieftain and drove the knife into the creature's chest. It howled in despair as it shrank before me. Finally, a husk of itself, a skin bag of bones and fur, it collapsed onto the floor. I felt power flood into me. I also felt my will recede as the knife began to exert greater control over me. "I am the One," I said in a vibrating, commanding voice. "You are the Many. You will serve me, or I will feed off each of you as I've fed off your chieftain." The tasks quailed in misery. "Stand," I said. It seemed as if they tried, but they could not. Something in me became enraged. I began to slaughter the fools, as they were unable to rise and defend themselves. I drank the essence of their spirits as I wielded the terrible knife from the other side of reality. The power or entity of the blade grew in me. I felt like a giant among pygmies. I could have used the tasks in slaying Baran, but they had resisted my will. They had resisted due to their love for Baran. As I rose from the last husk of a Tusk, I frowned. The Tusks loved Baran. It was the love of a people for a good king. Why hadn't I realized this before? No, 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 myself told myself. That wasn't right. It was the love of a dog for its master. I grinned, nodding. I could well understand that. I would make the universe kneel in obedience to me. I would slay Baran, take care of Sand, and wait for the Galactic Guard Dreadnought to arrive in our solar system. I would gain command of the mighty warship and use it as my focal point. I would soon rule the Galactic Guard and use their soldiers as my conqueror's edge. With a laugh, a mocking sound not unlike the silent laughter earlier, I strode to the floaters. The small part of Logan the ex-marine strove for control of my own body. I realized with sick loathing that the blade in my right hand controlled the physical part of me. The knife's name was... I couldn't quite sense it. I, or the knife, approached the floaters. Could it use one to fly down the correct tunnel to reach Baran? The me, the Logan essence, played dumb. I didn't have a clue as how to fly a floater. The blade entity seemed to accept that. Using my eyes, it scanned the three tunnel entrances. Then, sensing Baran down the middle tunnel, the entity moved us toward our ultimate destiny. Chapter 48. The knife and I both learned something interesting. As I marched in darkness under the earth, a gross sense of power started trickling away. Maybe it was the freezing cold under here. Maybe it was the darkness and the fact that we stumbled along in confusion. Maybe the laws of this reality were different from that of home. I shook my head and I realized that the Logan part of me was slowly reasserting itself. This was the home reality, not the other place. The strength the knife had stolen from the Tusk seemed to be transitory. The knife entity had known that. It was simply surprised at the swiftness of the passage. It didn't mean the knife lacked any of its unusual powers, just that it couldn't suppress my essence as it could when it first fed off the essence of the Tusks. I shook my head and realized I had a huge dilemma coming up. While the power drained faster than normal here, in our dimension, I sensed that the knife would have to dominate me only a few more times before it forever took control of the Logan part that remained. The trouble was that I didn't know if that would happen after one more takeover, or if it might be three or some other number more. That left me in a grave dilemma. Should I dare to use the knife again in order to stop Baran? If the knife took charge, wouldn't it simply open the portal on its own and summon its terrible brothers to our reality? I heard the silent mockery again. The knife realized that I needed its help. But the knife also needed me.
Wrong,
the thing seemed to say.
I can use whoever picks me up.
Yeah? I asked aloud. And who's gonna pick you up if we're buried deep under the ice and rocks in Antarctica? I could feel the knife entity thinking about that, working it over. Finally, it began making grandiose promises.
You will rule as a god.
That makes no sense, I said. I'll be your puppet. Heck, I might not even be me anymore. The part of me that is Logan will disappear.
No, you will remain as my tool.
What? I shouted.
That was incorrect. You will...
I scowled thunderously as I strove to ignore its words. I sensed its growing unease with me. I had a far stronger will than seemed natural to it. In the entity's reality, creatures did not possess such willpower. It was having a difficult time understanding where I gained the ability to resist its mental domination. It wasn't easy, but the longer I wandered in the freezing darkness, the less I heard the whispering promises. Finally, the voice was gone, leaving me alone under the earth. Had the entity picked the right tunnel? I didn't sense any warmth anywhere. I took out Rax, fiddling with the metal sheeting. Wake up, Rax, I said. I need some help here. There was nothing. The knife must be short-circuiting something in Rax. I wondered about the sentient crystal then. Could the Polarian that had long ago created the Star Corps really have been the one to give Rax crystals their intelligence? Had the original story I'd heard about the Rax system been wrong in that regard? Maybe Rax was more like the other dimensional beings than he was like us, but softened in some manner by our dimensional reality. I considered that and other things, becoming sleepy after a time, but doggedly continuing to trudge through the Stygian underworld. I'd been down here far too long and must have already walked 15 miles or more. Finally, though, I saw light flickering far ahead. Hope surged anew. I increased my pace. It was then I discovered that the tunnel walls weren't rocky here, They were steel, or some other kind of metal. I had to be in an ancient tunnel system first created by the Polarians. I shook my head as I realized that I'd followed the ancient way. Our galaxy's super beings had forged a path to a rip into a different reality. What had they been thinking? Had a sense of adventure driven them, or had they simply sought greater knowledge or power? I shrugged. The reason didn't matter. The truth was that a pygmy of an Earthling, good old me, was taking their terrible path to try to prevent their folly from entering our reality. I suppose the truth was that the greater the being, the greater his stupidity when it went bad. A bad dog wasn't nearly as deadly as a bad man. A bad dog could go around killing people, maybe racking up 4 or 5 kills before everyone was out hunting it down. A bad man, though, especially one who was charismatic, could end up killing millions by his evil. Mao, Stalin, and Hitler proved that. The Polarians were supposed to have been proto-gods. Thus, their turning bad could theoretically kill a galaxy. Rax, I said, shaking the crystal. Can't you wake up? I waited, expecting him to say something. He didn't. I'd put the knife in its scabbard when it had lost its hold over me. Now I heard a distant, sibilant whispering in my mind that was too low to make sense. I readjusted the knife belt. I told myself what a fool I'd been to leave all the beam carbines behind with the dead Tosks. I should have taken 2 carbines at least. I hadn't, though. I had the other dimensional knife, my wits, and a growing determination to make Baran see reason. I heard a whirring sound, and the brightness over there increased sharply. Had the Antaran turned on the chronowarp? Was I going to be close, but too late? A feeling of terrible urgency struck, awakening the knife's whispery, mocking laughter once again. With a curse, I put my head down and broke into a tired, staggering sprint, hoping to get to the portal in time to stop a galaxy-wide disaster. Chapter 49. Interestingly enough, the light came from a parked floater. Like bright headlights, the floater's various lamps were focused to light up a particular area. The chamber I entered was vast. It felt like a cathedral, with arched ribbing almost higher than the lamplight could reach. Along the sides were banks of what I took to be ancient machinery. Some of the machines whirred. Some had lights that ran through various sequences. A few were screens, showing a bizarre world of seemingly spongy soil with occasional vents hissing heat waves. There were drifting fogs, some of them mere tendrils, and I saw grotesque, shimmering metal stanchions or statues. By grotesque, I mean like the twisted metal statues I'd seen at our local university, forms without meaning made by people who seemed to despise the good old values. Newer machines stood to the side of the vast chamber. Various beings studied the controls of that machine, adjusting, tapping, and checking with each other while speaking softly. They were smaller versions of Baran. By that, I mean each was a little shorter than me, although each was skinny like the Antaran. They all had Baran's long-faced features, all were male, and each wore a metallic-seeming suit similar to Baran's. Are they your sons? I asked. Baran stood before what seemed like a large square entrance in a wall. You could have driven a bulldozer through the opening. The square outline of it shimmered with pulsating power. The square itself was fuzzy like a bad TV connection. I had no doubt that was the Polarian portal, which was much smaller than I'd anticipated, having expected something that would accommodate a spaceship. I glanced around but couldn't see a chronowarp anywhere. Maybe it was in an engine room, or with whatever powered the portal. At my question, Baran had turned toward me. The tall Antaran had the rod attached to his right thigh over his customary metallic uniform, but he also had a golden circuit around his head. I had no doubt that the golden circuit supplied him with extra power or abilities. I did not see any Tosks in evidence. The sons of Baran, if that's what they were, looked up at me and then went back to work. None of them reached for a weapon. They were too intent upon their machine and its controls. After giving me a flickering glance, Baran turned back to the square portal, considering it. Finally, he faced his team and asked them a rapid-fire question.
"Several more minutes," one of them said.
Baran nodded and fully faced me.
"Did you bring the knife?" he asked.
I nodded woodenly. This wasn't what I'd expected. Well, the machinery and the portal seemed right. The Antaran's attitude toward me seemed way off.
"Bring it here," Baran ordered.
I walked as if to my doom. I couldn't summon up a positive attitude this time, as I didn't see a way out of this. If I drew the otherworldly dagger, it might be the last thing I ever did as a free will agent. If I didn't use the knife, Baran would certainly open the portal and doom us all.
I see,
Baran said while studying me.
You are not attempting fakery at the moment. You are deeply troubled. You always were an open book to me.
I couldn't even drum up a snappy reply. I studied him and was shocked to see something other than his usual arrogance. I might have detected fear in his eyes. That revived me some. I mentally picked up my pace. Baran, I said, I told you the truth earlier.
As far as you understand the truth, he said.
Yeah, I guess that's right. I don't know why San would lie to me, though.
There are a multitude of reasons why he might,
Baran said.
You told me yourself that Sand is a Palladian construct.
So?
The construct could actually be protecting his masters, not attempting to thwart them as he seemed to have told you.
Okay, I said. Look, you seem worried. Baran glanced at his team. Maybe they were clones instead of sons. Each of them seemed so Baran-like. But if they were clones, why were they all considerably shorter than him? I almost laughed aloud. The reason for that seemed obvious. They were shorter because he'd made them inferior. This Antaran Domini had a complex. Whether it was an inferiority complex or a superiority one, I couldn't tell. I used the knife, Baran. I slew your tasks with it. He shook his head as he detached the rod from his thigh.
You shouldn't have told me. Now I must enact a punishment for your bloodlust.
Why do you think I told you? He paused, cocking his head.
That is an excellent question. Why did you tell me?
Sand gave me the weapon to slay you. The construct has been protecting the Earth and the galaxy for a long, long time.
I'm listening.
I'm supposed to slay you because you know too much about all this. I'm also supposed to do it in order to keep you from opening the portal.
I have detected stubborn resistance to the portal's opening, Baran said. That must come from the great machine. Perhaps I must destroy it and Sand before I can proceed.
I shook my head. Don't you understand? I'm here to stop that. A smirk stole over his features.
Just you?
No, I said while hitching up my parka. I have this. I indicated the sheathed knife.
While I have this,
Baran said, raising the rod.
And this?
The blue Nimbus force field switched on, surrounding his form.
If that proves inadequate,
he said as if from far away.
I also have them.
Several of the clones raised beam pistols, although none as yet aimed them at me. To tell you the truth, Baran, I'd rather persuade you than attempt to fight you.
You are thereby showing a modicum of wisdom,
Baran said,
as you cannot defeat me. The problem with your tactic is that you will also prove unable to persuade me. My mind is made up, Logan, although perhaps there is some truth in what you say.
Then stop this madness, I pleaded. Baran shook his head.
I cannot stop. This is the end to a lengthy quest started decades ago. In fact, I have worked a lifetime to reach this point. I understand more than you think. I know the Palladians made a grievous error. Nonetheless, I must test myself against them and learn their wisdom.
Their wisdom proved to be folly, I said. It led them to their doom. Do you want to go to your doom and prove that folly has guided you all this time?
Your question answers itself. I am Baran. I am supreme in this reality. Now I will learn ancient Palladian wisdom and gain the power of that dimension.
The risks
are exactly what I crave,
Baran said, interrupting me.
Don't you understand? I'm bored by our reality. That boredom has driven me to supreme daring. In fact, my daring is legendary. I am the One.
The word One startled me, as that was what the knife had said about itself. Pride goes before a fall, I quoted.
Ambition is the mother of greatness,
he countered. Why won't you listen to reason? Baran glanced at his team, pointing at them. The clones of Baran began to work in earnest, tapping, studying, and manipulating their controls. Power glowed on the outline of the portal. The fuzziness of the insides began to shift and change. Slowly, I perceived another reality matching that shown on the screens. The portal was opening.
No, I shouted, gripping the knife's handle. I will not permit this.
Baran whirled around and aimed the rod at me as a milky beam rayed from the weapon. I froze, unable to move, but able to breathe, see, smell, and hear with perfect clarity. At the same time, the portal became sharper.
Logan, Logan, Baran said. I have a much greater understanding of what you're carrying than you realize. I wanted you to bring the knife. In fact, I engineered the situation with Sand so the construct would feel compelled to give you the weapon.
I stared at Baran, unable to even glare at him.
Did you truly believe that your guardship's approach would remain unknown to me?
Baran shook his head.
How simple and predictable you really are.
I couldn't believe him. The Tasks had almost killed us with the floaters. No, he was boasting, lying in order to sap my willpower. And yet, why would he bother lying now?
Lord,
a clone said. Baran turned to the portal. A wisp of fog drifted from the other side to ours. It seemed to struggle to push through a film that still separated our dimensions. Then it was through, and a noxious stink accompanied it. The foggy tendril drifted farther and then seemed to solidify in the chamber, growing heavier as it sank toward the floor. I peered at the portal. It was an eerie world with vaporous tendrils drifting in different directions. The place seemed murky, like a limbo realm without a sun yet with light of sorts. I thought I saw a vast creature in the distance of that world, but it was difficult to make out as it trod upon the soggy soil. At that point, the sunken tendril in the chamber congealed into a human-like form, crouched over at first. After it finished reshaping itself, it unfolded and stood to its feet. The form was still ghostly and eerie, and it produced two narrow eyes that glowed red like I imagined the fires of hell.
Hello, Baran greeted the ghostly thing. I've been waiting a lifetime for this meeting.
Chapter 50. I strove to move, but proved unable. I tried to squeeze my hand harder around the hilt, but could not even do that. I was simply a frozen witness to the terrible event. The ghostly form regarded Baran, the red eyes brightening as it did so. At that point, red beams from the eyes flashed at Baran. The red eye beams washed against the blue nimbus. Both brightened and began to pulsate. After a short span, it became obvious that the rays could not penetrate the Antaran force field. At last, the ghostly thing from across the portal quit beaming.
Yes,
it said in a sibilant whisper.
You will do. You are superior and thus worth my weight. I will inhabit you, creature of flesh. I will explore your dimension.
The words cut off as the clones of Baran worked with haste, causing a whine to increase from a parked floater. Baran laughed, raised the baton, and shot a milky beam at the ghostly thing. The beam seemed to color the murky shape, adding depth and weight to what had been a wraith before. The whine from the parked floater increased yet again. The milky beam thickened and the thing solidified from head to torso to legs to feet, until it seemed to have white skin and thick white hair followed by a fully formed body. I spied a nose, lips, and teeth as a Polarian opened his mouth in shock. Finally, Baran stopped beaming the Polarian, lowering the baton and watching with interest. The Polarian examined his hands as if seeing them for the first time. He felt his body and seemed astonished.
How?
The Polarian asked.
I am Baran of the Antares Institute. I am the greatest mind of our universe. I have learned of your condition, and it tempted me to attempt a fantastic exploit. Tell me, sir, what is your name?
The Polarian blinked as Baran spoke. Afterward, the Polarian frowned, and the wonder on his face transformed into what appeared to be horror.
How long have I been gone?
The Polarian whispered.
For cycles of time, Baran said. But...
The Polarian faced the portal. Suddenly, he threw back his head and howled. He clawed at his face, scratching and tearing at his skin. Blood spurted beneath his fingernails. Then, abruptly, he lurched toward the portal, pushed through the hazy film and staggered back into the other reality. Baran seemed astonished as his eyebrows rose.
Strange, he muttered. I'd expected more from the encounter. Lord,
a clone said, indicating the portal. Instead of a fog or a tendril, a large shadow thing marched toward the returned Polarian and the entrance into our reality. The Polarian stood in horror as the thing approached. The shadowy being swatted the Polarian, shattering him into many bloody pieces. It was uncanny, sinister, proving that other laws governed that realm's physics. The huge shadowy being regarded Baran with glowing yellow eyes.
Hmm, Baran said. I'm not sure I'm ready for this one yet. Lower the portal's gain.
Nothing happened. Baran turned and swayed as if shocked. The chief clone seemed altered. He grinned wickedly at the Antaran. The clone raised his gun and beamed his fellow clones, burning them down before any of them could react.
You miscalculated, Antaran, the evil clone said in a booming voice. I left the Palladian and slipped along the floor to take over this being. Now the master comes. You are doomed, creature of flesh.
We shall see, Baran said stiffly. He raised the baton as the clone aimed the beam pistol. They both shot each other. The milky beam hit with greater force than previously. It burned the clone and seemed to burn the resident foggy being that had inhabited the Palladian. How that being could have caused the flesh and blood Palladian to take on its fogginess, I did not have the slightest clue. At the same time, the green beam washed against the blue force field to little effect. Abruptly, the clone or its otherworldly wraith screamed in agony, and in an instant, it turned into a dirty puff of vapor that spiraled upward before it vanished. Did that mean the entity from the other reality was dead? I did not know. I certainly felt as if it had died, but that did not necessarily make it so. One thing it meant was that no one was at the controls. If the need arose, could the floater still feed more power into Baran? I believed the golden circuit around his head was linked to the power grid that ran through the parked floater, or maybe all of them there. In any case, Baran turned to face the portal. He and I watched as the giant shadow creature slowly oozed through from one realm of reality to another. The thing became dimmer, less substantial, and finally plopped through. That caused the shadow giant to fall onto its face. A moment later, it pushed against the floor and seemed to float into an upright stance. The shadow was black again, with ferocious yellow eyes. It was huge, maybe 10 feet tall and half again as wide. It seemed evil and powerful. Was it more powerful than Baran? I had a feeling I was soon going to find out.
Chapter 51.
You have opened the way,
the shadow said in a harsh voice.
I deem that a miracle, as I have attempted for a time upon a time to open it. Are you the miracle worker who managed this feat?
I am, Baran said, sounding pleased by the question. Do you have a name?
I am the master.
The master of what? Asked Baran. The shadow shook his head.
I am the master.
Baran stroked his chin. Have you always been the master?
I am weary of your interrogation. I rule here as I rule wherever I go. You will now instruct me in the process of opening and closing the way.
Supposing I do as you say, what reward will you give me for this instruction? Baran asked. The giant shadow thing looked around the chamber.
You have slain a vial, I see, and in such a short time. You are a power, then?
I am, Baran said.
Ah, I see that a terror has taken weapon form,
the shadow thing said while studying me.
The terror strains to move the flesh vessel. Am I to take it you paralyzed the flesh vessel?
I have, Baran said.
For what reason?
Asked the shadow. Firstly, Baran said, to keep it from attacking me. Secondly, so I can study it later at my leisure.
But you do not possess a later, as your existence is about to end.
Caused by you? Baran asked.
Can you doubt it?
The giant shadow asked. Is there no way we can come to an accord?
Indeed,
the shadow said.
There is a simple method. You must merely bend your knee to me and open yourself to one of my vials.
Baran smiled even though perspiration dotted his brow. You expect me to meekly accept defeat?
You are flesh. You are thus a slave. That is the way.
Have you forgotten that this is a different reality, a different dimension? Here, then, the rules also differ.
So the Palladians of long ago spoke on first meeting me. I had almost forgotten their arrogance. Yes. It was a pleasure dominating them. Perhaps that is why I have longed to see this realm. I shall enjoy dominating you arrogant flesh beings.
Without further ado, Baran aimed the baton at the giant shadow as nearby floaters whined with power. It appeared the clones hadn't controlled that after all. The milky being shot at the master, striking him and coloring a dime-sized area on his shadowy surface. The master roared and he aimed a shadow hand at Baran. A portion of shadow seemed to peel off the fingers like ink bleeding into the air, floating toward Baran. I watched the shadow blot advance at what seemed like a leisurely pace. Baran backed away from it. Did he think he could dodge the thing? Yes. The Antaran ducked, but the blot of inky shadow followed until it reached the blue force field. The Nimbus brightened as the shadow blot oozed deeper and deeper, trying to pass the force field and touch Baran's skin. No, Baran said while tapping something on his chest. The Nimbus strengthened, and the floaters parked nearby began to tremble as their engine whines increased dramatically. The master laughed with gong-like peals of doom.
You are a miracle worker indeed. You attempt to thwart me. This is delicious beyond words. Few have attempted this, and not in 1,000 times upon 1,000 times have any resisted this long. I will study you, miracle worker, so that I may increase my span of knowledge.
Baran did something to his baton. The milky beam thickened, and it created more color where it struck the shadow form battling him. The area of color grew so it was several inches in diameter.
I feel that, the master said. It is a strange numbing sensation. How are you able to do this?
Baran had begun to sweat in earnest and did not answer the question. Abruptly, the master groaned as if in pain. He turned from Baran and examined the floaters.
I begin to perceive,
the master said. He aimed a hand at a floater. A dark ray beamed toward it. No! Baran shouted. The floater shuddered and suddenly ceased shaking and whining. The lights in the floater died and so did the engine. One by one, the master destroyed the remaining floaters. Then he turned back to Baran and intensified the inky shadow attack. I tried to move during the duel. I could not. I tried harder, and slowly I managed to bat an eyelash. That didn't seem like much, and yet it almost seemed like everything. I began to strain harder, wondering if I'd even get a chance to fight.
You haven't won, Baran shouted.
He floated upward, no doubt using the anti-gravity mesh inside the soles of his feet. The Antaran leaned toward the tunnel exit and began flying away.
Stay, the master said.
He blasted the exit with a thick black beam, and rocks rained down, sealing the escape route. Baran spun around. He looked wild and desperate. He flew at the shadow giant, and he beamed the thing with a baton even as he closed. The Antaran also drew a device from a fold in his metallic garment. The thing gleamed silvery. Now the master used two shadow hands, aiming them at Baran as streams of shadow blots battered at the blue Nimbus. The force field no longer shined as brightly, and it seemed thinner. The area of color on the master had grown considerably. Inky shadows oozed from the area in his side. It seemed like blood from a stricken human. The master groaned, finally using a shadow hand to try to staunch the bleeding, if that's what it was. Baran flew closer, and he sped up at the last moment. He slashed the master in passing with the silvery thing, cutting out a clot of shadow. The shadow giant made a hideous sound that might have been a scream.
Miracle worker, I will make you suffer an eon for that. You have kindled my wrath.
Baran swerved in the chamber, rushing in for another slash, cutting out yet another clot of shadow.
I have prepared a long time for you, Baran boasted. I have read and studied everything known about your realm. Now I am about to defeat the so-called master of the shadow dimension.
Once more, the Antaran swooped down at the master. He made the slash, and the shadow giant leapt upon Baran. The blue Nimbus crackled and smoked. In turn, color streaked the master in crackling lines all over his shadow form. Baran's silvery blade hacked and stabbed at the shadow. Abruptly, the Nimbus flickered off.
No!
Baran said in horror.
Yes,
the master cried. He put two shadow hands directly on Baran. The Antaran made gobbling sounds as his eyes popped outward in terrible shock and pain. For a time, they stood like that. Then Baran screamed. It was a terrible, wretched thing to hear. I wanted to cover my ears, and suddenly I did. I bent my head, averting my eyes from the brutality of the master. With a choking sound, the screaming quit. The silence lasted long enough that I grew curious. I looked up. Baran lay on his back in the other dimension. He lay in a heap, seemingly crippled. He yet breathed, and a look of dire hopelessness filled him. The master ignored the Antaran as he regarded me. The huge shadow seemed to pant. As he did, the cracked lines of color on his shadow form began to heal. The wound of color on his side slowly darkened. His eyes changed color many times, until finally he regarded me with yellow glowing orbs.
"Who are you?"
the master said in an angry voice.
"Why doesn't the terror control you?"
I realized now that it was all up to me. If I couldn't figure out something, this hellish master was going to invade our reality with who knew how many of his unstoppable minions. Chapter 52. As I stood there before the master, I wondered about the otherworldly knife. It seemed terrified of the giant shadow, almost as if it was hiding from him. I had no idea why, if I was even correct.
"It doesn't matter,"
the master said, and he seemed to lose interest in me as he studied the chamber. I said, thinking as fast as I could. "How can I best help you, sir?" The healing shadow regarded me again.
"You wish to aid me?"
"Yes, sir," I said.
"Why?"
"Well, I saw what you just did to Baran. I also realized you defeated the Polarians long ago."
"That was the last good battle I had,"
the master said. "Exactly," I said. "You just defeated our best. Well, our second best, that is. Our dimensional champion wondered if you could defeat Baran. No one thought that was possible."
"Hold your impertinent tongue,"
the master said as he studied me more intently.
"Your words indicate there is another in this realm like Baran."
"I don't mean to correct you, sir, but our champion could kick Baran's butt any time of the day. To tell you the truth, I'm a little surprised it took you as long as it did to defeat the Antaran."
"You expect me to believe these lies?"
"Suit yourself, sir," I said with a shrug. "And you know what? I'm rescinding my former offer."
"Explain your meaning."
"I asked how I might help you, remember? That's because I thought you were tough. Now I see our champion is going to sweep the floor with you."
"Describe this champion to me."
"What's to describe except that he's a living creature of fire? He's nothing like the rest of us flesh and blood humans. We all piss ourselves when he enters a room." The master seemed to calculate.
"Baran caused me pain,"
he said at last.
"I have not felt pain like that for a time upon a time. I am unsure."
He laughed in a diabolical fashion.
"I see that you are a font of knowledge. I will take you with me when I step back into my reality."
That was not what I wanted to hear. "Our champion's coming fast. I'm going to enjoy watching him destroy you."
"No, little gnat. You are going to suffer far longer than you can imagine. I am going to drain every ounce of knowledge from you. Now that I recall the episode, that was the mistake of the arrogant Polarians. They did not study a new place. They charged in, confident in their considerable strength. While I am clearly the strongest, a combination of foes might possibly..."
The master made a sudden motion with his hand.
"You are coming with me to my realm. I see that I must summon my Ur-Dire. Besides, a dip in the healing pool will speed my recovery. Did you hear me, flesh creature? Come here."
"I heard you, Lord," I said, cowering. "And I re-extend my former offer. I thought you were an arrogant idiot, but I can see you have deep cunning. Maybe you can beat our champion after all."
"Are you a traitor to your kind that you willingly tell me these things?"
"Not at all," I said. "I simply like siding with the winner." "You're a winner, sir. You handled Baran," I snapped my fingers, "like that."
"You are a pathetic creature,"
the master said. "Please, sir, I just want to help."
"Bah, how can you help me other than by..."
A boom sounded, causing the rocks in the rock slide that sealed the exit to shake.
"What was that?"
the master asked, sounding concerned. I had no idea what had caused that, but I said, "The champion is coming just like I told you."
"Hurry here,"
the master said.
"You will move through the portal with me. I will study the odds for a time and summon my Ur-Dire."
That let me know that Baran must have come closer to winning than he might have thought. For all his boasting, the master did not want to face someone that could easily kick Baran's butt. It also gave me an idea. "Sure thing, sir," I said. "That's damn clever of you, if you don't mind me saying. Do you want me to first get the book on our champion's abilities?
Explain your meaning and be quick about it.
I was freebasing ideas as fast as they popped into my head. I felt as if the master, the giant shadow, was like the genie in the old Aladdin tales I'd heard as a kid. I couldn't defeat him, but maybe I could cork him in the bottle, if only I could get him to go back into it.
Flesh creature, why are you stalling?
Oh, I said. Baran stashed a book on the champion's abilities. He planned on trading it with you if things turned out badly for him. The master turned to look at Baran on the other side of the portal. The Antaran still lay there in shock.
You are lying,
the master told me.
There is no book.
I snorted and shook my head. Go ahead and ask Baran if you don't believe me. I can wait. The master's yellow eyes blazed and he pointed a shadowy arm at me.
I could blast you into pieces with a thought.
I don't doubt that, but the question still stands. Do you want the book or not? I waited, knowing that everything rested on the shadow's next decision. Slowly, the master lowered his arm.
Where do you gain this courage? Or does mere stupidity drive your tongue?
I'm the cleverest man on earth, I said. That's why Baran brought me along so I could advise him.
I deem that dubious, as you were paralyzed when I arrived.
Of course, I said, because Baran feared my brilliance. Still, I gotta say, sir, how am I gonna help you if you question everything I tell you?
Impertinent rascal. We shall find out soon enough if you're a liar or a miracle worker's advisor. Await me here, as it will not be easy for me to transfer you through the portal twice in short succession.
The master thereupon turned to the portal and made the slow passage from one dimension to the next. At that point, I ran for a side hatch. It opened easily enough. I saw what had to be Baran's chronowarp. It was a large metal disc the size of a dinner table and with as much depth. The thing churned inside as it created the necessary conditions to open the portal between realities. I took a deep breath. I had to destroy the thing and I had to do it now. But I didn't possess any weapons except for the terror that was inside the otherworldly knife. Okay, I told the terror in the knife. Listen to me. I think I have it. You're terrified of the master. I have no idea why, but that doesn't matter. Here's the deal. Help me destroy the chronowarp and the passageway closes. That leaves just you on this side, and from what I've seen, you'll lord it on Earth for 10,000 years or more. The knife lay inert in the metallic sheath at my side. I'll also let you overpower my will, I said. You know I have tons of cool tech stashed away, right? With me as your slave creature, who will be able to stop you? I had the sense that the knife was thinking over the proposal. I yanked the blade out of the scabbard, holding it up. What do you have to lose? I asked. This is your chance for greatness. All you need is the daring to grab for the gold ring. The knife suddenly pulsated with power, and I felt my personal body control slipping. Let's do this, I said between clenched teeth. I lunged at the chronowarp and hacked at the metal. It resisted. Then the terror in the blade activated whatever powers it possessed. For the next few seconds, I hacked and slashed the chronowarp until it stopped vibrating and supplying whatever it did that opened the pathway between dimensions.
Now you are mine,
the knife said in my mind. Give me a few more seconds, though, I said. We have to make sure nothing went wrong. Reluctantly, the knife seemed to agree. I hurried through the hatch and stopped in shock as I saw the master looking around as if to see where I'd gone. I had a split second's hope that I could slink back into the side room. Then the master saw me and his yellow eyes blazed with wrath.
What is the meaning of this?
He said in a grim voice. Master? I asked.
Come here, slave. I want to see the book.
Chapter 53. The knife in my hand wilted, all attempts at dominating me ceasing. As I approached the master in the chamber, I sheathed the otherworldly blade.
I sense a change in you,
the master said.
But that does not matter. The Antaran agreed with you. He had written a book. He actually tried to barter with it, the fool. Now give it to me so I may study the champion's abilities.
Look, I cried as if horrified. The portal is closing. The master turned toward the portal. Nothing seemed amiss. The way was still open. Why hadn't destroying the chronowarp closed it? I saw Baran on the other side as wisps of fog seemed to sniff at his prone form. Would one of them try to possess him? Or do they have to wait for the master to give the order? It seemed like a monstrous process. I realized that Baran's mind still functioned, as he must have recognized what I had been doing in making up a book about a non-existent champion. The master turned to me.
This is amazing. The portal is indeed closing, although it will take time before it is shut. I deem that it will remain open for a few spans yet. How did you sense that it was in the process of closing?
Destroying the chronowarp had worked. That was a relief, and the master didn't seem to understand anything about the process.
Thing,
the master boomed at me. Right, I said, finding it hard to concentrate with my fate on the line. I was running out of ideas. Ah, I said as he glared at me. I patted the knife sheathed at my hip. The blade stirred as if with outrage that I'd blame it. The master's shadow head jerked up as he seemed to do a double take.
The knife names you a deceiver. It says you tricked it into helping you.
Oh, right, I said sarcastically, as if that's even possible. I'm just a poor creature of flesh and bone, remember? I'm not like you guys. Can I possess you?
Do not prattle foolishness at a time like this,
the master said. Sorry about that, I said, but the knife is a notorious liar. It has possessed me for quite some time, and I've watched it use me to lie to everyone.
The knife claims it has not controlled you.
That's another lie, sir, I said. I'm sorry if that shows up poorly on the rest of you.
What does that even mean? I am the master. The terror in the knife is at best a foot soldier in your way of thinking.
Is that why it was banished to our realm so long ago? I asked.
What are you suggesting? A Polarian stole the knife and brought it here.
I laughed, shaking my head, which flung droplets of sweat from me. My nerves were close to breaking. I can't believe the knife is really trying to lie to you, the master of its kind. What's the usual punishment for lying to you, sir?
Do not seek to interrogate me, flesh creature,
the master said.
Otherwise...
The rocks of the rock slide shook again, harder and louder than before. What was doing that?
Get the book,
the master told me.
Do not attempt any more foolishness, and be quick about it.
I took a step and then hesitated.
What's wrong now?
The master asked.
Why aren't you getting the book?
The terror, sir, I said. What if it controls me while I'm getting the book and the knife forces me to do something stupid?
You can't think I believe any of your lies.
Sir, how could I resist the terror's control? That's what happened this last time, just like I told you.
As to that,
the master said,
I have no idea how you could resist the terror. The idea seems preposterous that it isn't controlling you now.
There you have it, sir. The giant shadow stared at me.
Quick, give me the knife.
I began to unbuckle the belt.
You promised,
the knife wailed in my mind.
You said I could rule here once the master departs.
Did you hear that, sir? I asked.
I did indeed,
the master said.
You were right. It is a deceitful little terror. Pitch it to me and get the book.
Yes, sir, I said. But then I couldn't move as the knife fought against me.
Bah,
the master said.
I do not have time for this tomfoolery.
He beamed me with darkness. A terrible vitality filled me, and in that instant I saw reality differently. I'd been seeing it with a physical bias, giving weight and substance to flesh and bone. Viewed now with some of the master's power in me, I realized we were the insubstantial ones and they the things of true substance. I doubt that makes any sense, but I realized the Polarians must have made the same error. To the shadow beings, we surely appeared insubstantial, as things to flick aside or dominate, depending on their purposes. I tore the belt from my waist and pitched the scabbard and knife to the master. I could see the terror in the blade. It was hideous, with red-rimmed eyes and fangs for teeth. It glared at me in otherworldly hatred. I could feel it like heat against my soul. Tearing away from the burning glance, I ran for another hatch. Not the one where the broken chronowarp lay, but a different one. I finally sensed the shadow being's innate power. It was terrible. We were like pygmies to them. As I ran, I marveled that Baran had done as well as he had against the master. The Antaran truly had been a super genius. His ambition, though, had led him onto one dangerous path too many. There was a lesson in that. I didn't ponder it as the hatch opened. I looked back. The master watched me, and it seemed as if he had grown suspicious of my motives. It occurred to me that the terror in the knife must have been telling the master my real plan. The question was, which of us did the master really believe?
"You will have great wealth when you bring me the book," the master boomed.
I waved to him, nodding, and yet still I hesitated.
"You will have power,"
he promised. Did the master believe I'd tricked him? Did he still hope, though, that I would come through for him? When a person really wants something, it's easier to trick him into believing you'll do as he hopes.
"Did you lie to me, flesh creature?"
he shouted. "Never," I shouted back. "Don't believe anything that Terror tells you. He's a terrible liar, sir." The rock slide at the exit rumbled and shook once more. At the same time, the portal scene changed, becoming dimmer. The master glanced back at the portal. He seemed to study it. Then he glanced at me.
"Why are you still standing there?"
he shouted.
"Get the book, you fool."
I was starting to believe that I could actually pull this off, and that changed my mood. Even though this was probably stupid, I couldn't help myself. "I'm having second thoughts about this, sir," I shouted.
"Vain creature," he roared. "I will blot you out."
He aimed a shadowy hand at me and fired an inky black blot. I should have ducked, but I couldn't. Horror filled me as I realized the master's dominating will must have been holding me in place. I shouldn't have needlessly antagonized him. Why had I been so stupid? My horror grew as the inky blot neared. I hate to admit it, but I couldn't take it, so I closed my eyes. Then the inky blot began to sizzle. I opened my eyes. What the heck? The inky black blot burned up just inches from my torso. It seemed unable to advance to consume me.
"What are you?"
the master shouted.
"Have you been pretending to be a fool? Are you really the champion?"
I was too surprised at what had just happened. I was too relieved that I wasn't dead. I couldn't drum up anything to tell the master. The shadow made as if to fire another inky black blot, but paused and reconsidered. He headed toward the portal and he began to push through. It seemed like more of a struggle this time than last. It proved to me that the way was indeed closing. Something primitive welled up in my heart, something elemental and maybe even childish. "Hey, master!" I shouted. He turned. I raised my right fist and then my middle finger. I hoped this pissed the tar out of him because he nearly terrified me to death. "And don't you ever come back here, you weakling," I shouted, shaking the finger at him. In the end, the master ignored me as he continued to push through the membrane between realms. The terror in the knife was making whining noises. Finally, the master plopped through to his side. He turned to regard me a last time and spoke words that I couldn't hear. I figured he was making dire promises. I brought up my second hand and doubled my flipping off power. I knew it was juvenile, and saw myself for an instant as a monkey in a tree hurling rotten fruit at a lion looking up, a lion that had almost eaten me on the ground. In any case, the master turned to Baran, scooped him up in his shadowy arms, the terror knife secure in one hand, and surely carried him off to a dismal fate. Soon thereafter, the portal closed for good. The rocks of the ceiling rock slide, however, continued to rumble and shake. Chapter 54. I stood shivering in the cathedral-like chamber deep under the Antarctic ice, drained from the encounter with the master. Fortunately, lights from the ancient Polarian machines provided enough illumination so that I could see. Now that I thought about it, though, I had no idea how far underground I was. None of the floaters was in working order. All the clones were dead. In a sluggish, half-aware fashion, I looted the corpses, buckling on two of their gun belts and taking the beam pistols that went with them. As I did that, the rocks of the rock slide continued to do their thing. I was sure someone or something was attempting to dig me out. Who or what that was, I couldn't figure out. As I waited, slowly regaining my awareness, coming out of shock, I suspect, I kept thinking about the final inky missile that had sailed at me. What had caused it to stop short? What had caused the sizzling? I couldn't fathom an answer.
"Logan?"
The word made me jump half out of my skin as my throat tightened in fear. A second later, I clawed for a beam pistol, drawing it from a holster.
"What is wrong?"
Rax asked me.
"Do you sense more danger?"
"You bastard," I shouted. "You scared the crap out of me."
"For what reason?"
asked Rax. "What happened to you? Why have you been out of it all this time?"
"I do not know why."
A revelation struck. Hey, did you stop an inky missile from striking me?
Give me a moment, please. Some of my connections still seem stiff.
How can they be stiff? I asked.
Ah, I see,
Rax said.
Yes, I did stop the attack.
How did you manage that?
Through an electrical discharge,
Rax said. How did you know an electrical discharge would work?
That, Logan, is a leading question. I will have to study the dilemma for a time before I can provide satisfactory data.
I wondered if I should tell Rax about my new theory concerning Rax Prime crystals, that a Polarian had brought them to sentience after returning from the Shadow Realm. I figured I'd tell him later when we could argue about it. Right now, the tumbling rocks shouted for our attention.
This is interesting,
Rax said.
I believe our benefactors will prove to be the bronze robots.
As Rax said that, a bronze robot hand reached through and yanked back several rocks and then poked its robot head through, looking around. The thing appeared to spy me. It withdrew the head, pushed aside the final blocking rocks, and clanked through. The robot moved in the familiar mechanical fashion, heading straight for me. Is it friendly? I asked Rax.
I seriously doubt that,
the crystal replied.
As you once told me, Sand wants you dead after completing the mission, correct? The mission is complete, thus Sand likely desires your demise, and that is the robot's task.
A cold feeling welled in my gut, spreading outward. At the same time, more bronze robots clanked into the chamber. One of them carried what appeared to be a medium-sized old-school TV. What is that? I whispered to Rax. The crystal did not reply, but he didn't need to. At that moment, the TV screen flickered on and Sand peered out of it. The entire troop of robots clanked toward me. Would my beam pistols be able to wreck all of them? I kind of doubted it. In any case, I rolled my shoulders, pushed aside parka fabric, and rested a hand on the butt of each holstered gun. If I was about to die, I would at least go down fighting. Soon, a semicircle of giant robots, all of them far too close and blocking my escape, stood at attention before me. The one with the comm box stood closest.
This is the ancient portal chamber,
Sand said from the screen. I reckon that's right, I said. The robot holding the TV-like portable swiveled back and forth. It seemed as if Sand studied the dead clones, the busted floaters, and other indications of battle.
According to my sensors,
Sand said,
the Antaran successfully opened the way between dimensions.
You got that right, I said.
Did you witness the event?
Yep.
I had wondered,
Sand said.
That provides me with something of a dilemma. According to my post-victory schedule, this is the moment to eliminate you and Rax from the greater problem.
Hold on just a minute, I said.
There is no sense arguing about it,
Sand said.
I have decided. I listened to you once and it proved successful. I do not care to take a second gamble, especially as there is no pressing reason why I should do so.
Okay, I said through a tight throat. So what's your dilemma?
Isn't it obvious?
I guess so, I said. You want me to tell you what happened here before you off me?
On no account,
Sand said,
as I would not believe a word of your story. Your sense of self-survival would surely cause you to lie in some fashion. No, I must control you first to ensure that you speak the truth.
Oh, yeah, right, I said. That makes perfect sense.
It is astounding how you often come to the correct conclusion, even with your own future on the line. What causes these moments of clarity and rationality?
I couldn't reply. The letdown from defeating the Master's other-dimensional attack, the unfairness of Sand wishing to murder Jenna, Rax, and me. Hey, I said, have you already killed Jenna?
Not yet,
Sand said.
I decided to let the two of you die together.
So, your robots are going to escort me to your ship?
That is correct.
And your ship is going to take me to your underworld?
Of course,
Sand said.
I have already told you my desire to know what transpired here. You hold the memory. Once I control your mind, I will have you describe everything in exacting detail. Only after that will I eliminate you.
So, I said, forcing my sluggish mind to churn out ideas, What about Baran's confederates at the Saturn station? Sand did not speak right away. The bronze robot holding the comm TV did point it at the dead clones. I bet those confederates are gonna figure out that Baran failed down here.